Royal Crown is going to town with...
Believe It or Not!
Butlers and neighborhood stores who serve you Royal Crown present Bob Ripley with more of his amazing Believe It or Nots, B.A. Ralph and his orchestra, and lovely Linda Lee. And here's your friend Ted Jewett.
Folks, the thing I like best about Royal Crown is its sparkle and flavor. And after
now, wait a minute, Ted. That's what you say. What about the other folks?
Well, that's what other folks are saying in towns and cities from coast to coast. Impartial taste tests, sworn to before notaries, prove that taste and zest are what people want in cola drinks. Tested against other leading brands of cola drinks, Royal Crown wins 9 tests out of 10. In Grand Island, Nebraska, for example, they sure know their cola drinks there. In a taste test there against competitors, Royal Crown won out by a vote of nearly 2-1. In Miami, Florida, Royal Crown, tested against 3 other popular cola drinks, was chosen for taste by twice as many people as the nearest competitor. So you see, when it comes to taste, pep and sparkle, Royal Crown tops the field.
And here is that superb, significant, spectacular, sensational, scintillating, sympathetic sage with a supercargo of sweeping, sparking, sizzling, singeing, steaming, scorching socceroos. Believe It or Not, Bob Ripley.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the program tonight.
Bob, I still don't know the answer to your problem, Believe It or Not, of last week.
No?
You asked me, in what European country are all officials sworn in on a herring?
Linda Lee, that country is the Isle of Man in the Irish Sea. When an official takes the oath of office, a herring is laid on the table and cut open. Then the official places his hands on the herring and says, I swear to do justice between man and man as equally as the herringbone lies between the two sides of this fish. Believe it or not, Linda. Many times, people have asked me, what is your strangest, believe it or not? Well, my answer is that I have never found the strangest, believe it or not, because the strangest thing hasn't happened yet. Each day produces new and more astounding happenings. And so I will not call tonight's drama the most astounding. I prefer to leave it completely to your judgment, but let me sketch it for you. The place is Mozambique, east coast of Africa, where I visited on my last African trip. The scene takes place in 1819 in the harbor of Lourenço Marques. The English slave ship, the Comet, is in the harbor. Captain Richard Willing and his first mate are examining a cargo of slaves ready to be taken aboard. The captain speaks to Alvarez, the Portuguese slave trader.
That fellow will do, Alvarez.
Si, Captain.
That makes 628 slaves. You can take one more, eh, Mr. Mate?
Yes, Captain Willing. That'll make us a full cargo.
Ah, Captain, see. Here is nice fella. Strong, like a bull. Look his muscles. Got good teeth. See?
You trying to pull the wool over my eyes, Alvarez?
Oh, no. No, I no try to cheat you, Captain Willing. Him one good slave.
We can't use that slave. He's an old man.
Look at his muscles. He wore 3 of the Jong slaves.
We're taking these slaves to Brazil, Alvarez. And they make us pay a heavy fine for any slave that is over 26 years old.
Hmm. Good to you.
No.
No good to nobody. Too old. Huh? We let him loose in jungle.
The jungle? Lions. But that's murder, Alvarez.
Go to jungle.
Well, I'll take him then.
You take him, Captain?
Captain Willing. You ain't going to take this old slave to Brazil?
You want me to be responsible for his murder, Mr. Mate? I said we'll take him. That's final.
As you say, sir.
Very good, then. Tide is about to change. We're sailing for Brazil immediately. Come closer. Oh, yes, it's you, Doctor.
Yes, Captain.
I don't know what seems to be the matter with my eyes. Probably a bit too much of the sun.
That's just what I want to talk to you about, Captain Willing. Remember, on the third day after we sailed, one of our slaves went blind?
Yes, I remember you telling me about it.
It's a sickness, Captain. It's spreading all over the ship like wildfire. Hundreds are going blind already.
What?
As a matter of fact, I'm almost blind myself, Captain.
Is there any cure for it?
It is an eye infection I've never heard of. I've tried everything, but nothing helps. The way it's spreading, it's just a question of time before everyone aboard will be blind.
Hello, in there. Is this the captain's cabin? Hello, I say. I can't see. I'm blind.
Yes, Mr. Mate, I know we're all getting blind. It's a sickness that's spreading all over the ship.
But what are we going to do? The quartermaster, he's blind already. What's going to become of us? We'll read the compass now, huh? We'll steer the ship. Oh, God, if only I could see. If only I could see.
Every man aboard that ship, including the captain and the crew, became totally blind. And the Comet floundered helplessly at the mercy of wind and waves. As our next scene opens, we find Captain Richard Willing, the blind captain of a blind ship, sitting hopelessly in his cabin when a knock comes at his door.
Yes, come in.
Are you the captain?
Yes. Who are you? I don't recognize your voice.
I am the old slave. You saved my life. You bought me in spite of the fact that I was too old.
Old slave? Old slave? Oh, yes, I remember. But you speak English, like an Englishman.
I am an Englishman. I am not a slave.
But you were dark as any African slave.
Captain, 20 years ago, I was shipwrecked on the coast of East Africa. I was captured by a native king and forced to work under a blazing sun. That is why my skin has become as dark as that of any African native.
So you're an Englishman. No one would ever have known it.
You have saved my life, Captain. And I would like to help you.
Help me? Do you mean that the sickness hasn't touched you that you can see?
I have been blind for the last 20 years. Ever since they captured me and made me a slave.
And if you were blind when I bought you, how would you be able to help me now?
I am used to being blind. I have learned to do without my eyes. I can tell where we are by the feel of the wind. Right now, we are drifting north by northeast. And I tell you, Captain, if we continue, we'll be wrecked on the Cape before daybreak. You see, 20 years ago, I was captain of a ship, just as you are now.
Where do you hail from? What is your name?
I am a native of Liverpool. My name is Richard Willing.
Richard Willing?
Yes, Captain.
Did you ever command a ship called the Swan Craig?
The Swan Craig was my ship. But how did you know that?
And was your wife's name Agatha?
Yes. How do you know all this?
We were told your ship had sunk and everyone aboard had perished. Your son followed in your footsteps and became a sea captain like yourself.
A sea captain? Then you?
Yes, Father. I am your son.
And he was his son. Captured Richard Willing while in East Africa, purchased an old slave to save him from certain death. While they were on the high seas, everyone aboard became stricken with sudden blindness.
and the blind ship drifted hopelessly away. Then a miracle happened. The old slave who had been blind for 20 years turned out to be an expert seaman, and despite his handicap, actually succeeded in navigating the ship safely to Brazil. Then the most unbelievable thing happened. That old slave turned out to be none other than Captain Richard Willing's long-lost father. This incident may be verified by the official report of Sir Robert Melville, Lord High Admiral of the British Admiralty. Believe it or not.
VA, I understand the Believe It or Not musical division has a royal treat in store for our Royal Crown audience.
Yes, Bob. Tonight we've taken the hit song of 1904 and arranged it as it might be written today.
Mm-hmm.
It's a modern, streamlined version of Hiawatha, bringing our Indian friend as up to date as the Trilon and Patosphere.
Okay, VA.
Bob, in your Believe It or Not travels, did you ever come across the cola nut?
Oh, indeed I have, Ted. And here's a Believe It or Not about the cola nut. You know, the extract of the cola nut is used in all cola drinks.
Yes.
And in that wide region between the Valley of the Niger and in West Africa and the Congo, I discovered that the highest honor and the greatest compliment a native chieftain can pay to a traveler or a distinguished guest is the gift of a cola nut. Believe it or not.
Thank you, Bob. And here in America, too, a drink of Royal Crown is a sure way to honor your guests. It's the cola drink you know they'll like. You see, Royal Crown is the taste favorite. Not because I say so, but based upon certified taste tests from coast to coast. Tested against other leading cola drinks, Royal Crown is the winner in 9 tests out of 10. So be ready always to please your family and guests. Buy the handy home carton, 6 bottles for only 25 cents. And remember, each bottle of Royal Crown holds not one, but 2 glasses full to the brim. And here he is again, Bob Ripley.
Next to a man's home and family, his greatest interest is his job. So tonight I've brought 3 people to the studio who have jobs that certainly have no equal on this broad American continent. First, I would like to introduce a young man whose job is so odd that it has changed his whole life. He is Robert McCarroll of New York.
Good evening.
Tell us, Mr. McCarroll, who do you work for?
I work for Cynthia.
And who is Cynthia?
She is the most beautiful, the most glamorous thing that ever wore women's clothing. She is the toast of Cafe Society. She has traveled to London, Paris, Chicago, and Hollywood. But Mr. Ripley, she's the dumbest, the most helpless blonde in the world.
Be careful. Cynthia's sitting right here on the stage beside us.
I know. I'm her personal valet, her social secretary, her escort, and her bodyguard.
Well, won't you please explain?
Well, suppose Cynthia has received an invitation to a soiree on Park Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
I have to choose her clothes. Then I have to dress her.
Wait a minute, Mr. McCarroll. I think I'd better explain. Ladies and gentlemen, 2 years ago, the famous show window model designer, Lester Garber, created her out of plaster. She is the most beautiful plaster model in the whole world.
She's beautiful, Mr. Ripley, but she's a great problem. I have to carry the dame everywhere she goes, upstairs, downstairs, in taxis, all over. Comb her hair, wash her face, take her apart and put her together again.
Well, tell me, how much does this pulchritudinous pile of plaster weigh?
About 125 pounds, stripped. That's without her wig, of course.
And when Cynthia is fully dressed and weighed and in her right mind, is she ever mistaken for a real woman?
Yes, many times. And people think she's very snooty. In fact, one woman wanted to slap her when she wouldn't answer.
Well, you sound like you get a great kick out of your job.
Mr. Ripley, you know the story of Pygmalion and Galatea, the statue that came to life.
Yes.
Well, with Cynthia and myself, it has just been the opposite. In my case, it is the statue that has brought me to life.
What do you mean?
Well, because of her, I now go places and meet people that I never would have otherwise. Also, I get $5 in expenses every time I take her out. We've been going steady 2 years.
So, now, tell me truly, if Cynthia here could be brought to life, how would you like it?
I don't think I would, Mr. Ripley. If she were alive, she could talk.
Well, Robert McCarroll, I can truly say you have one of the most fantastic odd jobs I've ever heard of, that of escorting the most beautiful girl in the world. But this beautiful girl is made of plaster, believe it or not. My next Bleed It Out job holder has come all the way from Kirkland Lake, Ontario. He is just 17 years old. His name is Orville McCrae.
Good evening, Mr. Ripley.
Orville, will you tell our audience what you do for a living?
I work in a cosmetic factory.
But, Bob, there isn't anything very odd about that.
I not only work in a cosmetic factory, Miss Lee, but I eat cosmetics.
You eat cosmetics? Now, please, I've been using them for years, but I've never heard of anybody eating cosmetics.
Suppose you tell Linda why you eat cosmetics.
I eat cosmetics to see if they have turned sour or if the chemicals are all properly mixed.
Well, this strange diet of cosmetics must affect your eating habits.
I have developed a real craving for them.
Well, Orville, you want to practice moderation or you'll become a cosmetic addict.
Don't worry. After work, I just nibble at a jar of cold cream or take a nip of hair tonic.
Oh.
And besides, in my job, I eat cosmetics from as many as 15 different vats in one day.
15 different vats, for example?
Well, there's cold cream, vanishing cream, hair tonic, face lotion, and brushless shaving cream.
Your cosmetic intake must be pretty high, Mr. McCrae.
Mr. Ripley, I eat a gallon of cosmetics every day.
You eat a gallon of cosmetics every day? Well, that is certainly one of the oddest jobs I ever heard of. And I thank you, Orville McCrae, for coming here tonight and telling us about your absorbing occupation. Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard from Orville McCrae, whose job is to eat 1 gallon of cosmetics a day. Believe it or not. I think my third, believe it or not, certainly has a job unlike anyone else in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, I present Mr. Ralph B. Cass of Bainbridge, New York.
Good evening, Mr. Ripley.
Mr. Cass, your job is so odd that I will ask you to tell us how it all started.
Well, on January 12th, 1938, I set my fox trap out in the woods.
Fox trap?
And when I went out to look at it, I found an animal there, but it wasn't a fox. It was a porcupine.
Hey, porcupine!
Say, Bob.
Yes, its foot was caught in the trap, and I felt so sorry for it. So I took it home and nursed it back to health.
Well, that's what I call a harmful little armful.
Believe it or not, she was a very friendly porcupine. And I named her Minnie the Moocher. In fact, I got stuck on her.
I'll bet you got stuck on her.
Not the way you mean. She has a great affection for me. You see, she had a little baby porcupine shortly after I captured her.
Well, now, tell us, what did you do with that mother porcupine?
I milk her.
Bob, did I hear right? Did he say he milked a porcupine?
That's what he said, B.A. And I'm sure that Mr. Cass is the only man in the world who actually milks a porcupine.
Yeah, now, Bob, I know how to milk a cow, but I'd like to
see you milk a cow.
Old milking a porcupine is very easy, Mr. Roth. I milk my porcupine twice a day, and its milk contains 10 times as much butterfat as cow's milk.
And with that tremendous percentage of butterfat, porcupine milk should have a great value to the medical profession.
Best of all, porcupine milk never gets sour or rancid, no matter how long you keep it.
Well, then I should think that the porcupine milk business would be very profitable.
I hope someday to have a complete porcupine dairy. In fact, I have procured a husband for Minnie the Moocher, a nice, spiny fellow whom we have named Ferdinand the Bull. And you watch, Mr. Ripley. It won't be long before I have myself a modern porcupine dairy.
Well, I bet you will. You know, you talk like the cow or B.A. isn't here to stay. But I wish you all the luck in the world, all the luck in the world with your new diary project. And I thank you very much for coming here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, I've just presented Mr. Ralph Cass, who has the job of milking porcupines, believe it or not. The time, the place, and the girl. Linda, that means you, and you mean a song.
But, Bob, tonight it's just wishing.
Right, Linda, and if you'll whisper your wish right into that microphone before you, we'll be listening.
For the clouds to roll away and greet the bright new day with a song. Wishing will make it so. Just keep on wishing and care will go. Tell us dreams come true. It's no mistake. Wishes are the dreams we dream when we're away. The curtain of night will part. If you are certain within your heart. You wish long enough, wish strong enough, you will come to know. Wishing, wishing, wishing will make it so.
Well, Linda, wishing may make it so for some people, but another way to get ahead in this world is to be better than the fellow next to you. Royal Crown is getting ahead in city after city and town after town. In Montgomery, Alabama, Royal Crown sales are up 1 million bottles over 2 years ago.
And in Dallas, Texas, they're up 5 million, Ted.
That's the way it goes. When a product is better, folks find it out. They try Royal Crown and like it. Every sip of this tasty, tangy cola drink makes another friend for Royal Crown. And don't forget this. Every bottle of Royal Crown holds not one, but two long, tall glasses of the most cooling, delightful thirst quencher you've ever known. Try Royal Crown. Get the handy home carton for the weekend. It holds six big bottles, and it only costs a quarter. That's 12 full glasses of sparkling refreshment. Relax and enjoy Royal Crown.
And remember that the makers of Royal Crown, Knee-High Corporation, Columbus, Georgia, are also makers of the famous Knee-High and Party Pack beverages.
Last Friday night, I made an appeal to the people of America to promote safety on our highways and reduce the appalling toll of almost 40,000 lives lost every year in automobile accidents. As if in almost grim verification of what I said, traffic accidents over the 4th of July weekend amounted to the staggering total of 612. In my appeal, I ask that every man, woman, and child write to the governor of his state and insist that traffic laws throughout the 48 states be made the same. Since then, governors of 25 states have wired me expressing great enthusiasm for this vital safety campaign. So at this time, I would like to pay honor and express my appreciation to these governors. Bud Collier and Ted Jewett call the honor roll of our governors who want to make the United States united for safety.
Governor Lehman.
New York.
Governor Holt.
West Virginia.
Governor Batolson.
Idaho.
Governor Chandler.
Kentucky.
Governor Horner.
Illinois.
Governor Carr.
Colorado.
Governor White.
Mississippi.
Governor Carville.
Nevada.
Governor Moses.
North Dakota.
Governor Hoy.
North Carolina.
Governor Bricker.
Ohio.
Governor Miles.
New Mexico.
Governor Bushfield.
South Dakota.
Governor Smith.
Wyoming.
Governor Rivers.
Georgia.
Governor Wilson.
Iowa.
Governor Martin.
Washington.
Governor Moore.
New Jersey.
Governor Baldwin.
Connecticut.
Governor Barrows.
Maine.
Governor Olson.
California.
Governor Bailey.
Arkansas.
Governor O'Daniel.
Texas.
Governor Saltonstall.
Massachusetts.
Governor Blood.
Utah.
And thank you, governors, for your magnificent response. And I would like to ask again that every man, woman, and child in America write to the governor of his state and insist that steps be taken immediately to provide uniform traffic laws for the 48 states. The governors are expecting your letters and will cooperate. So let's all of us make the United States united for safety. The number 7 is a sacred number. On the 7th day of the 7th month, that is today, the Brahmins of India celebrate a festival called the Feast of the Flower Petals. The children of the family strew mango flower petals in the path of their parents each morning, and the youngest blesses them with this benediction, which I would like to repeat to you now. May you have many lamps to light your feet and much wealth. May heaven caress you with a refreshing breeze and make your happiness eternal.
Here's a special announcement. Next week, Bob Ripley will bring to his Royal Crown listeners Clint Russell, who plays championship golf in spite of the fact that he is totally blind. Next Friday night, this blind golfer will be playing in the PGA tournament in Long Island, and a description will be given direct from the golf course. This is Bud Collier speaking for the makers of Royal Crown. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.